This episode of the Inner Hoe Uprising is sponsored by Native.
This episode of the Inner Hoe Uprising is also available for your viewing pleasures on YouTube. If looking at people while they podcast is your thing, then you can click the YouTube link in the show notes and gaze along as we talk our shiznit. Inner Hoe Uprising. Welcome to the Inner Hoe Uprising, the podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, one black, non-monogamous, pansexual, feminist hoe who lives in New York City, who wears a mask whenever she can't socially distance, and who is still down with the resistance. She have bars as well? I'm going to stop there.
And me, Rodeca, a fat, black, non-monogamous, existentialist femme whose life is a series of coincidences that somehow landed her here. I decided to, go back to the OG calling card, guys.
OG.
It just felt right, and that's just what life is. Coincidences, so I'm here.
I love that.
And Akuba. What am I going to be this week?
Do whatever you want, you know?
Multifaceted.
I am going to be the socially distant... Oh, I'll be the socially distant hoe with the WAP. Yes.
Hey!
That's still my
thing. That's right.
Wait, does the A in WAP stand for Akua? Is it wet Akua pussy?
I like that.
Claim it and make it yours, yo.
Yes, there we go.
Yes. A very specific kind of pussy for the pussy dinosaur. Every episode of the Inner Hoe Uprising works like this. Myself and my lovely rotating co-hosts talk about sex, love, and dating as it pertains to current events in the world, our lives, as well as yours. And occasionally we hit you with interviews with insightful folks or do deep dive episodes on a topic of our choice. We're doing that today. On this episode, we're talking about new relationship energy. What is it? How does it drive your budding romance? And what impacts can it have on the rest of your life? Plus, have you got a good morning routine? Well, we're going to talk you through how to develop one. And we're going to answer the age-old question, where is the ass in 2020?
Where is it? That's the only fucking question.
I've been asking.
And if you would like
Carol Baskin. Sorry. Oh okay.
The bars never end.
This is where I begin my rap career.
That's it. This is a budding rap career and you are witnessing live and in color, okay? And if you would like to follow along with the conversation had in this podcast on social media, you can do so by using the hashtag InnerHoeUprising so we can see it and the hashtag PodIn so other people can see it.
And if you would like to follow us on social media, you can do so at Inner Hoe Uprising without the G on Twitter, at Inner Hoe Uprising with the G on Instagram and Facebook. You can join our Facebook group by searching Inner Hoe Uprising Community. That's CUMMUNITY. You can head to innerhoeuprising.com to sign up for our weekly goodies via our newsletter, pay a hoe, or check out the rest of our merch.
If you want to pay us to speak virtually at your school or conference about sex positivity, black feminism, podcasting, or other kinds of topics we discuss in this here show, we would love to. Or if you would like us to host a consent, pleasure, or dating virtual workshop for your organization, we would love to do that as well. To book us, you can send us a line to ihupodcast@gmail.com. That email address will be in the show notes. And now we're getting into a segment that we call Hoe of the Week. Hoe of the Week is where we shout out the homies who have supported Inner Hoe Uprising in the past week. Hoes of the Week get special nicknames, and the game, if they choose to participate, is to guess the meaning behind their nicknames. This week we got Kelsey, who became a patron on Patreon, aka Kels. We got Montre, who I told the meaning of their nickname on Twitter, so I hope you like that, Montre, who also became, not became a patron, but up their Patreon pledge. Thank you very much, Montre. We got Berry, and if you don't know Berry by now, she's the reason why we use the hashtag PodIn in the first place. But Berry's nicknames are Berry, obviously, aka the GOAT, aka the podcast Godcast, because that's who nice. The fuck Berry is. Thank you very much for becoming a patron, Berry. We got Josephina, aka Joey, who became a patron on Patreon. Thank you very much, Joey. We stan you. We got Dominique D, aka Dom, who became a patron on Patreon. We got Jamisha W, aka Cracking Up, which is a reference to our Zoom call that we had with you all right before this episode was recorded. Thank you very much, Jamisha, aka Cracking Up, who became a patron on Patreon. We got Karima, aka Karamat, who became a patron on Patreon. Thank you very much, Karamat. And we got Dylan X, aka Dylon, because they spit hot fire.
That's it.
Who became a patron on Patreon. If you would like to be a hoe of the week and get a cool nickname of your own, here are some things that you can do. You can leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. You can feature us in an article you've written or shout us out on social media. These are some non-monetary ways that you can support us. We love monetary and non-monetary support. And we understand that in these uncertain times, monetary support is not feasible for many folks. Please do not spend your last dollars on us. Put you and yours first. But if you can, spare some change. You can donate to us on PayPal at paypal.me/innerho. You can become a patron on Patreon by going to patreon.com/innerhouprising. Or you can purchase some merchandise at innerhouprising.com/merchandise. Hopefully the USPS works and you can get your merchandise. We cannot guarantee that in these uncertain times.
Yeah.
But we will give a refund. The links to all of those are in the show notes. Also, a reminder that if you become a patron on Patreon for $2 a month, you can participate in things like our Slack chat, our patron-only film nights, and for $5 a month, you can join our Monday night Zoom hangouts. And at any Patreon tier, you receive access to our episodes a few days early, entry to our workshops and parties, and entry to our pre-episode recording Zoom calls that we used to do on Instagram, and then we were like, now we're gonna give this to people who pay for it.
Yep.
So now we're giving it to people who pay for it, and it's been fun times. Now we're going to get into our self-care tip of the week, which is the segment where we give you some tips on how to care for yourselves. Akua, tell us about making a morning routine.
Okay, so today our self-care tip of the week is to create a morning routine. And first up, what is a morning routine? So a morning routine is a set of actions or behaviors you perform in the morning, usually before starting your day's main activity. If you're anything like me, pre-corona shelter in place, your morning routine consisted of snoozing 7 different alarms, finally getting up, scrolling through social media to make sure the world hadn't ended while I was asleep. which then led to aimless and time-consuming scrolling. And then the morning hygiene practices, brushing my teeth, washing my face, washing my ass. And then commuting to work. I cut out the part in which I also then got my child up because that's kind of specific to me. Some of y'all too, though. That was pre-corona. Recent corona activity, shelter in place. If you're anything like me, your morning routine looked like getting up 5 to 30 minutes before work, washing your face, combing your hair, and getting in front of the computer. Because that's all it did. Neither of these were good. Let's be honest. Neither of these were quite healthy morning routines.
But normal.
Yes,
yeah,
but normal.
Or typical.
Exactly.
Or
typical, yes. I recently changed my morning routine. The recent shelter in place was very, very bad for my mental health. Just because it left no time for myself working the same 8-hour days that I would work when we were out and about in the world and commuting. My Monday and Tuesdays were my long days, so that left nothing for me because the day ended at 7. It started at 11. I woke up at 10:55. The day ends at 7 and I'm in bed by 9. And those 2 hours in between were cooking dinner and then getting my son for bed. So there was just no time for myself. And that started to wane on my mental health, especially considering the fact that I'm already indoors. I'm not doing any of the social activities that I did to self-care. And now I have no time for myself. And my anxiety was looming because I felt like I didn't have any time. Because I didn't have any time. So I've recently changed up my morning routine and I wanted to bring that as a self-care tip to y'all. And we will go into the benefits of having a morning routine. One, a morning routine will set the tone for your day, which will allow you agency over your time and more control over your schedule, which capitalism encroaches on. Two, having a morning routine will increase your sense of accomplishment and efficacy and productivity, which increases dopamine, the fun sauce in your brain.
We love dopamine.
An increase of dopamine leads to decreased stress, improved mood, improved sleep, improved motivation, improved concentration, and improved movement. And lastly, the last benefit of having a morning routine and why we're talking about it in this segment is because it's self-care. So how do you create a more healthier morning routine than the one you probably have now? The first step is to identify what your current routine is and what you are dissatisfied with. So I was dissatisfied with waking up right before work, feeling like I had less time, and my increased anxiety. Then you can list things you would like to do in the morning. A tip is that these tasks that you're listing should help prepare you for the day and allow you to complete something that's important to you and that you're not able to incorporate in any other parts of the day. So some of the things that I listed in doing was more movement. As a therapist, I live a very sedentary lifestyle. I'm spending 8+ hours sitting, just sitting. And I've quickly realized how that has waned on my physical and mental health. And I wanted to be more active. I wanted to be more physical. I also needed more time outdoors in nature, outside of my home. I literally spent 14 days straight in my home looking at concrete walls since the shelter in place, and getting more time outdoors was important to me. So those I incorporated. After we have listed the things that we want to do out, we are planning it out. So we want to identify how long the task will take that we've decided. We want to prioritize and identify the actual probability. So I said that to incorporate all of this, I was going to take more walks outdoors and I was going to do that in the morning before work. So I had to realize, how long is this walk going to be that it allows me time to come and prepare for my sessions? And I said, okay, I want at least 30 minutes, 45 minutes, 30 to an hour, let's say. And I said, how probable is it that I will wake up an hour before 11 a.m. in what I've been doing? And I said, you know what, I'm going to wake up at 6 a.m. And that felt probable because that's what my schedule was pre-corona, pre-shelter in place. And I felt like I could do that. But we want to really be realistic about the probability of the time that you're setting, because if you're not, you're not going to do it. Don't say you're going to wake up at 5 a.m. if you have no history of waking up at 5 a.m. in the past 30 years.
I feel a little attacked, but yes.
Damn, are you talking about me? Because I'm 28, asshole.
Yeah, all you're y'all. Right. We want to give our routine 30 to 90 minutes and make sure that includes the basics of hygiene and fueling your body within that 30 to 90 minutes. So I have, in waking up at 6 a.m., I'm able to go for a hour walk. I'm able to come back and brush my teeth, take a shower. Because of this new morning routine, I'm showering daily now. Something new. Just something out there.
Woo! Added benefits.
Right?
A word.
I'm able to brush my teeth, take a shower, make breakfast for myself, and make breakfast for my son. Which none of this was happening before.
Yeah.
If you have more than one task, mine is just walking outdoors. It hits many points for me. But if you have more than one task that you want to add, incorporate one task at a time. We don't want to pile it on because that decreases the chance of this actually being effective. You want to start with one thing, master it, and then add on to it. And then you want to start at night. We want to prepare for our morning routine the night before. So I set my alarms. I actually have a friend who walks. She's in another state, but she's been walking in the mornings for the past couple of weeks. So I now text her and ask her for a morning wake up call when she gets up, because she also gets up at 6 a.m.
Oh, that's dope.
And I know that I will hit that snooze at 6 a.m. So that call from her will be the get up. All right, you hit the snooze, but here's this other reinforcement.
Yeah.
I lay out my walking clothes and my mask so I can find it. I have a little fanny pack with my Bluetooth headphones in it, my already charged to go, my keys, an extra mask just in case I forget one, a bottle of water by the door, all of that. So in the morning, I'm literally slipping on clothes, slipping on shoes, grabbing the fanny and walking outdoors.
Nice.
That's dope.
And lastly, you want to be consistent, but you also want to be flexible. If it doesn't work, if this morning routine that you've planned out doesn't work in actual life, you want to switch it up. You know, you want to edit it to make it fit, but you also want to, once you initiate your routine, you want to try to do it every day. So today I woke up and it looked a bit gloomy outside and it looked like it was going to rain. And my phone said, it's not raining now, it's about 50%, but at 7, it's going to be about 70%. And I thought, I don't got time to walk. If the weather's not permitting, I'll move it to later in the day. But it said it was going to be raining all day. So I said, you know what? Let me take my chances. Let me walk. But let me grab an umbrella so I'm not out in torrential rain, walking in the rain and risking pneumonia and corona. So, you know, I grabbed the jacket and I grabbed an umbrella and I made it work and I kept, and it was able to help me to stay consistent. So that is how you plan out your morning routine and work towards executing it. Examples of things you can add to your morning routine includes physical movement or exercise. I'm walking, but you can do yoga in the morning or light stretching. You can do dance, whether it's a Zumba on YouTube or just dance the game. You can add stillness or reflection such as mindfulness, meditation, journaling, or breath work. Or you can do a hobby in the morning. And if you want more on hobbies, listen to last week's episode where Sam gave us all the deets about hobbies as our self-care. So that is it for a morning routine as a self-care tip. Enjoy.
Hey.
That was great.
That was phenomenal.
Thank you.
I really resonate with like rolling out of bed and like, especially when I was working, literally every day beating myself up on some like, okay, why am I rushing for work again? Like, why am I feeling so frantic? And it does definitely set the mood. But like seeing it like this definitely makes it feel attainable, which a lot of the time when you look at something for the whole thing, you're like, I can't do this. So like, that's super dope. And I'm sure like a lot of people will need that same advice.
And not to, you know, get it wrong. In the beginning of the shelter in place, being able to roll out of bed and get to work felt so good.
Like, yeah.
It felt so good. But like as everything with the shelter in place, that quickly rubbed off. And it became a bit problematic for me.
Well, I'm glad that you've unproblematized it. It's good to see you out there. Even though I don't actually see you out there. I see you in my mind's eye.
I'm going to start sending you pictures. Too.
That would be really nice. Okay. Oh my God. Maybe we should all just exchange pictures of our morning routine.
Yes. Okay.
That sounds fun. Well, if you listening at home are like, oh man, I need a new morning routine and Akua's words resonated with you and you change your morning routine, we would love to hear about how you change your morning routine.
Yes.
We just want to know about Shell's lives. What are you doing? Who are you seeing?
We're nosy. Going? What you doing over there?
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
No, that's what it is.
I want to peer into your life.
That's why I became a therapist, because I'm nosy.
Exactly.
Like, I don't know what y'all thought. Help people.
What's going on over there?
I just want to know.
That's why I'm a podcaster and I like interviewing people about their deep, dark, personal depths.
Yes.
We nosy as hell over here.
That's it. Curious. I shine bright, I shine bright. And all my different colors, all my different colors, colors. We shine bright, we shine bright. And all our different colors, all our different colors. Brooklyn spiller, bad girl killer. Known as the baddest, ass ain't the fattest. More than my assets. And I still cause a lot of havoc. But I be on peace and positive energy. Still living in a world where folks trying to kill me. Here I be, black women and queer. Created all these rules that I couldn't adhere to. Resilient, but don't ever fuck with my rights. The more I rise, the more they're trying to bring me down, 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 down. All right, we're going to move into the actual show now with a segment that we call Fuck It. That is our topic of the day. Mm-hmm. And today we're talking about that new relationship.
Energy.
And Rebecca's gonna guide us through. So what is that? What does that even mean, man?
What is new relationship energy? So that's what we're talking about today. It's a buzzword that I've personally been seeing around the interwebs, especially in the poly communities. I've definitely talked about the fact that I'm more online, more in communities, and like this word came up time and time again. I kept showing Sam like screenshots and I was like, look, it's calling to me. I didn't ask for it, but it's telling me this is something I need to talk about. Yeah. And I believe that it's something that's starting to really resonate or talk about on the internet more as of late. I don't know if it's because, and I think we had discussed kind of this, which came before, whether or not we're just following certain people and that's why this stuff is coming up, or everyone's just of an age and we're all discovering things at the same time. I think it's a little bit of both. But it's kind of this realization that not everything is like this fairy tale thing, and that relationships, regardless of like how they started or how easy they felt at first, they take work. But it also kind of comes from the fact that we're recognizing that relationships come in different stages. You might have heard the honeymoon stage. So new relationship energy is definitely that, but it's being isolated as something that can propel a relationship forward, but it can also be kind of damaging. So a lot of us spend our earlier days of dating, like in high school and stuff, bouncing around from one like high to another. And some people have had long relationships, but very few have had lasting relationships. And when we do, like I said, we realize it takes work. So for me, it also resonated with me personally, because I think new relationship energy, or NRE, because it's going to be shorted to NRE a lot, is a big influence on me having been a serial monogamist. And I've definitely talked about this a couple of times, but I've been in pretty what I would consider serious relationships back to back to back for years now, pretty much since I started dating at 13. And I've experienced the fading of this honeymoon stage, or NRE, into ORE, which is ongoing relationship energy, or not, some people refer to it as old relationship energy, but I don't like that, just because I'm just like, eventually all relationships get there. So let's just say ongoing, as opposed to like summing it up as something old. But and that's something that I'm currently experiencing, but I've experienced time and time again. And I always personally thought of it as like a failure, or just like me and this person were not really quote unquote meant to be, because this like excitement and this over the top energy that comes in the beginning was becoming like work, or not necessarily in a negative way, but becoming something that you actively have to work at. And for me, it felt like, okay, then maybe this person isn't the one for me. Lo and behold, it's something that naturally occurs over time, and that's just like how relationships are meant to go. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna discuss NRE and the reasons why psychologists believe it may actually be necessary for the advancements of our species, because you know we love to talk about the bigger picture here, and why it never makes sense to make permanent decisions on temporary emotions. So new relationship energy, or NRE, is the state of mind experienced at the beginning of sexual and romantic relationships, typically involving heightened emotions and sexual feelings and excitement. It begins with the earliest attractions and may grow into full force when mutuality is established and can fade over time, like the feeling of NRE. The term is meant to contrast the feelings associated with an old or ongoing relationship. It was first coined by Zahai, and you can see the spelling in the description, but Zahai Stewart in the 1980s in the course of learning to understand and communicate important dynamics within non-monogamous relationships, especially his own. And in vanilla dating or monogamy, we usually refer to NRE as the honeymoon period. And I'm sure a lot of people have heard that more than they've heard NRE. Mm-hmm. So in comparison to limerence, we've actually talked about at length in season 5, episode 39, Hot Human Summer. It is often described, limerence itself is often described in negative terms, like unstable mood swings or short-lived euphoria, or kind of like chasing it. And a more colloquial term would be something like lovesick, which often borders on feeling unhealthy. Limerence also usually goes away when desires are reciprocated. It thrives on the secrecy, sometimes adversity, block communication, and the games of courtship, as opposed to NRE, which is usually mostly used in a positive sense, and it's enjoyable for all parties involved. It helps create emotional and erotic bonds on the way to ORE, and it can be creative and high-functioning, and it thrives more on the shared ecstasy and communication of it, often thriving when the feelings are found to be mutual, as opposed to with limerence, a lot of the time, once you find out that it's mutual or it's reciprocated, you're just like, I'm done, I need this next high. There can definitely be some overlap in NRE, because it's not always smooth sailing. It's not like this picture perfect thing that goes from one way to another. Emotions like anxiety, fear, and instability that are natural for new relationships and in general are very common in NRE. And sometimes limerence can blossom into NRE if it's managed to even out or become stable. It feels more bad than good. If it feels more bad than good and goes away when you know it's mutual, it's limerence. And if it feels mostly good and strong and grows stronger when you know it's mutual, it's NRE. And you can experience some of each. That's the best way to kind of like summarize it in case you're thinking about your relationship and you're like, what the hell is going on? So we'll talk more about signs about NRE becoming negative, plus polyamory and new relationships, especially in these uncertain times, and much more after the break.
Okay, well, is this conversation in this episode so far resonating with you? Is it helping you learn some new shit, helping you unlearn some old shit, or just allowing you to have a good ass time? It is? We love to hear that. We would also love for you to support the continuation of conversations like these. If you're listening to us on your podcast app, you can take a moment to subscribe to us or drop 5 stars and a rating for the homies. If you have a little extra change, you can drop some cash in our PayPal at paypal.me/innerho, or come join our Patreon community and access our chat and virtual events for as low as $2 a month by going to patreon.com/innerhouseuprising. Or you can just hit up your friend and say, yo, listen to this dope-ass podcast. It'll give you lots of dopamine. Am I right? We thank and love you all for your continued support. Do y'all want to know something?
What? What's that? What you going to tell us?
My personal belief system, not the entire system, but a portion of it, is that you can look, feel, and smell like a snack all day in the middle of a hot ass summer like this one, climate change, sorry, without harming your body.
Okay, I agree. Yeah. All right.
Cool. Well, my favorite deodorant, Native, has sold me on this belief, which you might be guessing. And you might ask, why has Native sold you? Well, that's because it's a great mother effing product. Native deodorant doesn't just block odor better, it's actually just made better. Native has ingredients you've heard of like coconut oil, shea butter, and tapioca starch. It's also vegan and never tested on animals. Aluminum forms a plug in your sweat glands to keep you from sweating. That's why Native never uses ingredients like aluminum, parabens, sulfates, or talc. And you might be thinking, man, I'm gonna stink without my aluminum though, but that is not the case. Switching to an aluminum free deodorant doesn't mean you have to sacrifice on odor protection. Native will keep you smelling and feeling fresh all day long. With over 10 scents, including rotational seasonal scents, Native has something to offer everyone. Their most popular classic scents are coconut and vanilla, lavender and rose, cucumber and mint, and citrus and herbal. Me personally, I'm currently rotating between the scents in their summer pack that includes coconut flower and mandarin, which is actually in my gym bag because it's a nice smell when I'm sweating. And then I have the one that I'm wearing right now, which is jasmine and cherry blossom. Smells very good. I wish you all had smell-o-vision over there because it's a pleasant-ass smell, which is why I wear it around the house. And then there's also cotton and cedarwood, which is like a fresh laundry scent. And I think that that one is good if you're going to like a business socially distant lunch or something like that. Like, it's not a overbearing smell or anything like that, but it smells very good. I love all three of them. I've used other Native flavors in the past. I call them flavors because I feel like I am a snack when I'm wearing it.
That's right.
But I've had other Native scents in the past and I really enjoy all of them. How about you guys?
I was one of the people who was skeptical because I usually use like what I consider a really strong deodorant, but I have not had any issues using it before. Like, I'll have it on all day and I feel like it mixes with my natural smell so nicely that I just feel like it's good and I have a great time.
Yeah, my shit was lavender and rose. And then what was the other one? Was eucalyptus and something?
Eucalyptus and mint.
Eucalyptus and mint, boy. But this citrus and herbal, I gotta go get me another pack of Native real quick. Citrus and herbal. I'm hearing all these new flavors. Like, wait a minute.
I also like the options. And the two that I have, or the three that I have, that's a part of the seasonal rotating pack, which was like the summer season. And then I think we're all gonna be able to try the fall season.
Now,
and I think one of them
summer.
Is pumpkin spice latte. And I'm like, ooh. I'm just curious to smell like that.
Ooh.
It's like a real for real snack. Yeah. That's so this should be entertaining. Another thing, it's an entertaining product to use.
It is.
So Native is risk free to try. Every product comes with free shipping within the US, plus free 30-day returns and exchanges. You can see why so many people love Native, in addition to the three of us, by checking out their over 14,000 5-star reviews. Do what we did and make the switch to Native today by going to nativedo.com/IHU. Use the promo code IHU at checkout and get 20% off your first order. That's nativedo.com/IHU. I as in inner, H as in ho, U as in uprising, or use promo code IHU at checkout for 20% off your first order. That link will be in the show notes. Now, when NRE goes negativity.
Yes. So up until this point, you might be thinking like, oh, okay, like NRE is something positive, and it's not necessarily inherently negative, but there are definitely some ways that it can be, and there are some signs to look for. So if you find that, you know, you're in a new relationship and you're losing interest in your passions as an individual, that's definitely a sign. Spending less than half the time that you used to with your other close people, like your family, your friends, or if you're in a poly relationship, your other partner, you're just significantly spending time away from them, that's a sign of the negative sign as well. Stopping doing things that we need to function, like eating, sleeping, washing up, physical activity. It seems like, why would I ever do that? But when you're caught up, you can get caught the fuck up.
I'm caught up. Got me feeling, caught up.
I do want to add that I remember, this was younger, back when I was young. new relationships, getting to know someone and like talking to them up until like sunrise. Like, and absolutely. That's the way it looks when you're not sleeping. Like, you're up all goddamn night with this nigga talking about what? Nothing. These niggas ain't got nothing to say.
These niggas have nothing to say.
Even like in these relationships now, like when I was younger especially, but like I love sleep and I'm up until like 5 o'clock just trying to prove that I can, like, I'm good, we're good, just talking about fucking nothing, because you just feel like this energy and that's what's propelling you forward, but you need to sleep. Like, I had work the next day, so I'm at work tired as hell because I'm trying to talk to somebody, and while it's cute, it could be a little damaging sometimes.
I wouldn't say it wasn't proving anything, but it was like, you feel like you can't get enough of that person. Yeah. Like, you're on this high. You want to talk to them all the time. You want to know everything. We be talking about favorite pizzas and if pineapple goes on pizza or whatnot. You know, childhood and what's your favorite color, foolishness. Yes. And then you skip into work after sleeping for 15 minutes on the train. Like,
trying to catch up on whatever you can because you're just like, I'm good. Like, I did it and I knew I could do it, but now I got to go back to real life. Another thing is massively changing our life to accommodate the new person in a way that interferes with things like our work and sleep. Exactly like we just said. Using the majority of our productive and creative energy on the new relationship instead of working and studying and hobbies. Spending most of our conversations with other people, talking to them to the point where it receives negative feedback rather than positive ones. This is a big one because you may want to talk to your friends about it, but if that's all you're talking about, then you start to think like, am I doing anything else? Is anything else happening in my life besides this new person? And if you see your friend rolling their eyes like, oh, this again, then you need to start taking that as a cue that maybe you need to like start evaluating stuff. Maybe I'm too in this.
If this is in the conversation, this is your 15th time saying, but Shamika said, you know who chooses like that? Robert. No.
And then you just hear that groan where you're like, that's a sign. Making non-negotiated changing on how much time we spend with other close people. Now, this is a good one because, again, this is for monogamy and for polyamory, but you're just doing things on a whim without even checking with people that you may have had plans with, or you just have an allotted amount of time that you have with people, especially if it's a poly situation where you might have designated day of the weeks. If you feel like it's like leaking into their time and you're just not even having a conversation about it, that's a sign that NRE is definitely taking over in a negative sense. Making life-changing commitments to that person, even though you've only known them for a short amount of time. A little bit later, we'll talk about like this. Well, really, it's just not making these permanent big decisions on something that you may find out later down the line isn't even really anything. And then lying to our close people about the degree of connection when we have a new person. Now, when lying comes into play, we already off the board where communication, now we're talking about borderline infidelity. And, you know, but NRE is something that was originally coined to be in the poly community, but it can happen in monogamous relationships, like transition wise, but also an overlap. And that's where like infidelity, cheating comes in, and you're kind of going on this tangent where you're attracted to a new person and you feel that new flame. And if you feel like you're lying, that could easily lead into a slippery slope.
So we have all of these things that we should keep in mind.
Yeah.
But we also know or have stated that NRE is this high where you're like not exactly thinking as straight as you would if you're not in NRE. So how would one counteract
So I can actually jump over to that because there is a point for that. Okay. The biggest thing to recognize is it's NRE provides a period of energy where you're blind to flaws, heightened emotional and sexual interest, and it's meant to either propel a relationship forward, but also the most important thing is realizing that you are in this stage. You can't really avoid it because, and we'll go back to that, because it's supposed to be something that does help relationships, especially good ones. But knowing that you're in this relationship and knowing that it's a new one and these things will happen, the best way that I can describe it is like a drug, right? So you're, take a drug, right? You're high. You just smoked a blunt. You're feeling it. You're like, holy shit, I'm having a good time. But the thing that keeps you leveled and keeps you grounded is knowing that the catalyst is that I just smoked this blunt. So these are temporary emotions and I'm feeling it, but it's that level of control of knowing that you're in it. And also using that to strengthen the relationships that you already have. So for example, let's say you're like, all right, I'm in this. I feel crazy. Everybody's just the butterflies on all that type of stuff. You can also use that and hone it to look at the people who are already in your life and say to myself, like, I feel this way, but I remember when I felt this way about XYZ, or rather, you know, when I look at my best friend, what are the things about them that I love that are unique to them and get me excited about being their best friend? Channeling that energy and even like creating it again with the people that you love, or your mom, or your best, your brother, any of those things, that's the way to use it, in a sense that it's no longer just about one person, a person that you don't even really know yet, and making it into something that can spread across your life in various ways. Being appreciative and present to all of the people in your life, especially the older relationships. This is really important in your poly relationships because there will be that overlap where you're meeting a new person and you may look at the person that you've been with and just think, well, you know, they'll be there, or just take them for granted and really indulge in this new space. But it's really important to time manage and to look at all the people in your life and say, I'm appreciative of them as much as I am of this person. Of the things that I'm learning about them, I know this about somebody that I'm already with, or somebody that I already am friends with, and I love that about them too. And also placing this less emphasis, and we talk about this a lot, but in general, placing a less emphasis on this romantic love being the end all be all, and recognizing that platonic, romantic, and familial loves all have these great importance in our lives, and they all have a space that really will make a whole person. So NRE may have you focusing and thinking, well, this person is everything and this is who I've been missing. But that's also taking away from the fact that somebody who's your best friend has been there for a long time, or somebody who's your brother has been there for a long time. These are all things that make you who you are, and your relationships are just as important with them as it is with this new person. But also taking that into consideration, loving and knowing yourselves. So that was something that I read and I was like, well, that seems kind of cliche, but loving yourself and knowing who you are outside of the reflection of a new person is so important in that, because another big aspect of NRE is like people bringing out things in you that you didn't know was possible, or things that you're just like, oh, this is exciting. They like this about me. I didn't even know I was this, or this, that, and the fourth. And yes, it is good because we are our relationships. It is good to bounce who you are off another person to kind of strengthen who you are. But if you don't know who you are and you're sitting here like, okay, this person says this about me and this is what defines me, that's where you get lost. Because if those things fade, those feelings over time, but also if that person goes away, you feel like all you are is that person. And I think this, I can bring this back to a conversation that me and Sam had recently, where I was talking about like really liking video games and how like always felt like that was validated through the men in my life, because I would just have this conversation. They're like, oh my God, we love video games. But I realized that like, it was not just because I was in these relationships that that was valid. It's because I wasn't finding these communities where people were also just as excited and as like, so the high went away when they were it was no longer a novelty for them. So I felt like I had to keep reiterating these things that are good about me, as opposed to just feeling confident in myself. So definitely knowing and loving yourself for the things that are unique to you, but also just the things that bring people towards you, knowing that even if there's no one around you, those things are still valid and they're still important. But that's basically when you see those negative things, you counterbalance them and use the energy for something that will propel your current relationships and your understanding of yourself. So yeah, that sounds good. Does that sound good? Does that sound like something you guys can do? Okay, cool. Good.
You Dora the Explorer.
I know, right? And I was like,
are you counterbalancing?
Good. Yeah, I, you know, look, guys, this is me as a person. You gotta get used to it.
No, we fuck with Dora. We fuck with Dora.
We do. But to go back, because always there has to be a reason why. Well, there is always a reason why, but what I found interesting for, exactly, what I found interesting for NRE is this kind of question of why this happens, because you can meet somebody and just kind of have it be level in terms of your emotions and everything in theory. Why does it have to be this high and then this low, basically? Why can't it always be steady? Right? So I read something interesting from Gwendolyn Seidman, an associate professor of psychology at Albright College. She wrote on Psychology Today that evolutionary psychologists claimed that it would be beneficial to the species to be really excited about and invested in the early stages of the relationship. It takes a considerable amount of effort to rearrange your lives to form a relationship. If it didn't feel so exciting and so wonderful, then people wouldn't want to put in the effort. Early humans who felt a lot of passion and excitement in the early stages of courtship are the ones who are more likely to pass on their genes. Which I was like, that makes a lot of sense.
Reasonable.
Yeah. And another quote, like, to tie that in was two of them, actually, from Zahai Stewart, when they wrote about new relationship energy in Love More magazine, and it was published in 2001. So they said, I see NRE as rooted in deep instinctual aspect of our species. It's the initial molecular binding energy which brings individuals together into intimate couples and larger groups, overcoming the fears, judgments, suspicions, vulnerabilities, and irritations which work against forming risky new connections with what are essentially still strangers. Lots of hot energy is given off as we open and partially merge our boundaries. In biological terms, this behavior survives because those who carry it are more likely to produce more viable descendants, both through having more sex, at least for a while, and by jumpstarting more relationships. It does say at least for a while. And by jumpstarting more relationships, which are important in raising our complex, slow growing offspring. And the next one, to summarize, is basically talking about a rocket ship and when you're being propelled by a jet-assisted takeoff. And then once you get into space, it's kind of like the slow ascent that's not as fast as the initial propelling. So that's to say, basically, you need this little jump start to get to the later aspect, which are slow and just kind of like not necessarily one note, but definitely more consistent and way less rocky and all of this type of stuff. So it's important in the NRE stages to not lose yourself or become addicted, but also to create these lasting bonds and really find out if you're compatible. A lot of people end up finding out that they're not even compatible because they're so hung up on these new and temporary emotions. NRE provides the energy where a bit of blindness is coming in. And even in very good relationships, there's a crucial phase of transition between NRE and ORE. And a lot of people have a tendency to give up once the spiciness starts to fade. And I definitely fell victim to that, less giving up outright, but definitely more receding in myself. And I would find myself, you know, flirting with new people and thinking this could kind of spice it up. And I never went as far as like, this is some, I never went as far as cheating, but at the same time, I can't say that I didn't kind of feel better when somebody was still attracted to me outside of a relationship, et cetera, et cetera. And that's coming from not realizing that I need to build these bonds within my relationship and feel secure within myself just by doing the work, as opposed to always looking for that new high, looking for this new drug, which is love or attraction. Mm-hmm. In terms of a polyamorous lens, NRE is a very popular term in the poly community. People in the poly community have the unique standpoint of often experiencing NRE and ORE at the same time. And when vetting a new partner, NRE can vary often overpower Ori because of the newness and the freshness, which we touched on. Experienced polyamorous come to anticipate and compensate for NRE. So while they might be tempted to stay up all night talking to new people, even though they have long-term relationships, they come to recognize that NRE can give any new relationship the impossible glow of perfection. So like, it's going back to just recognizing and knowing that this will happen. So rather than believing that all the things that are being said in the beginning are the absolute truth about the new partner, practice polys tend to allow themselves to enjoy the ride without taking it too seriously. It's like a job interview. You're there, you're the person's talking about, I'm gonna come in at 8 a.m. every day and do this and do that. But you kind of just go, okay, well, we all know you're trying to put your best foot forward, but we don't know what's really going to happen in the long run. You can expect some feelings of jealousy, especially when it comes to new partners, because you don't really know how NRE will manifest. But that's why it's important to be as communicative as possible with the existing partner, while also placing a heavy emphasis on time management. And on the flip side, a new flame can also carry over some passion and energy to an existing flame through things like renewed confidence and enhanced sexual spark. So the most important thing is not losing yourself, but also just realizing that while you can enjoy the high, all of your relationships matter as a whole. And don't let NRE catch you slipping out here, because you will be embarrassed for real.
Now Akua has a bit on NRE in these certain times.
So really there was a question when we were ideating this topic about how forming new relationships, if there's any impact or effect on processing trauma and grief in these uncertain times.
You have to root every conversation about sex, love, and dating in the coronavirus.
That's it. In it, because we're living it. And there's stress. And I tried really hard to get in my academic bag and use those resources, but have realized that I have lost the keys. Meaning my login and password. and Google Scholar was not giving me much. Mm. But I am currently reading The Body Keeps the Score by Dr. Bessel van der Kolk, a psychiatrist who specializes... Kolk.
Just fuck up their whole name then.
That's your fucking name now, because I like it.
and it is a book about trauma, specifically PTSD, its effect on its bodies and ways to treat it in therapy and otherwise. And in chapter 4, he talks a lot about the power of interpersonal relationships on trauma. In chapter 4 of the book, Dr. Bessel talks about the lack of tapping into interpersonal supports as a treatment for trauma. He talks about the fact that we have kind of moved as a society to this medical-driven, drug-driven treatment or focus of trauma. He does talk about numerous studies being shown that social support is the most powerful protection against overwhelming stress and trauma. I tried to find those studies. I couldn't because I lost some keys. But we're going to come back to you one day. And that the common response to distress is seeking out people we like and people we trust to help us, to give us courage to keep going. And again, that traumatized people find themselves chronically out of sync with other people around them. Really, that shows up in like social isolation. And that there is comfort in finding groups or people where traumatized people can replay their trauma. This works to alleviate social isolation that can come with trauma, but also creates this inflexible paradigm in which the person views themselves as part of this victim group and then others. So it's me and the people who understand trauma, who have been afflicted in trauma, and then there's everybody else, and they don't get us. It has this othering effect of people and can keep us captive to our trauma. We then become our trauma. We only see ourselves as having been afflicted by this trauma.
Is that similar to or the same thing as or in relation to trauma bonding?
Yes. It can definitely manifest in that way. So trauma bonding is whenever you bond with someone over trauma, and that can be if you and someone experience the same trauma at the same time, mm-hmm. With no other relation or tie to each other, or in this way in which you're then seeking other people who have trauma, and you can sit in this kind of enclave and, kind of reverberate or center yourselves around having traumatic experiences.
Mm. How do you think that may if you have thought that far, show up? Or like, what are like tangible examples or possible tangible examples of that in the era of coronavirus?
In the era of coronavirus, that's hard to say because there isn't much study or understanding of chronic trauma. We kind of tend to look at trauma as this isolated incident that happens. And we're just now getting into the space of people in chronic traumatic situations and what complex PTSD can look like.
Can you define what chronic trauma is for people who don't know what you're talking about?
Chronic trauma is traumatic experiences that continue, do not have a start and end point. You know, that is, so we're thinking of people who are living in war-torn states or in current areas of ongoing conflict. We're looking at people who live with their abuser, so experiencing daily forms of abuse and mistreatment. It hasn't had an end yet.
So could it look like living under quarantine in the worst country of all time?
Would you consider COVID?
Yes, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, so I was just about to say, yeah.
currently, it's continued trauma and stress because there hasn't been an end to COVID yet.
Right. I guess my question is, what would trauma bonding look like
in the time of the corona?
Right.
It could be kind of well-intended support groups in which people go to speak about their anxiety, but then kind of delve deeper into, like, kind of, I'll call them corona watch parties. So always, you know, sharing news with each other at all times, despite its impact on your mental health. Finding someone who will always share information with you, and you're sending them links and they're sending you links, which only heightens our anxiety and the stress around it, rather than helping us.
One thing that stands out to me is when you were saying the isolation of others. So I could see it be people who commiserate over shared COVID experiences, whether that be like frontline workers or loss or something like that. And then kind of like pinging that back and forth and being like, nobody knows but us, and kind of like isolating other relationships in your life.
That is actually a perfect example.
Like minimizing what other people are going through.
That's a great example. Yes. That's what I was going to say for my own personal thing. It's not coming from a space of any type of backing or research, but like when you first asked the question, I was like, oh, that's something that I've actually said in passing to Chris, who is my partner. And we spent a lot of time together. Like, we didn't leave the room. We were in the room together and kind of going through it. And we've definitely gone like, all right, we made it through COVID together. So we have to stay. Like, we've joked around and been like, we have to stay together now because we've been through like this experience together, and we worked it out and we did it. And it was just like this monumental, anything that was going on, it kind of strengthened this bond between the two of us. We were just like, all right, we're in this room. This is a shitty time, but we've got each other. And it just keeps bouncing back and forth where you feel kind of more strengthened when you're talking about COVID stuff together and all that type of stuff. But also, I've noticed that people that I wouldn't normally speak to in any circumstance have come out the woodwork. And it's like this thing that we can all talk about and build this bridge, even if you weren't planning on talking before. And it's like the first conversation, and you can really just go like, man, it's been 10 years, but COVID, right? And then that's when the conversation comes up. So I've noticed, like, when you describe trauma bonding, if I'm correct, that's what it feels like. Everyone is able to come forward and have these conversations and build, like, these bridges when they otherwise wouldn't, because we're sharing this crazy experience all at the same time.
When you were talking about NRE, I realized, and I don't know if it's the Demi in me, but I do that with friendships. Like, I get very excited about new people. And you talking about that, I realized that I have trauma bonded with someone, you know, due to the abuse in a workplace. But then after I left that situation and was no longer experiencing that mistreatment, we no longer had anything to talk about, except for them continuing to talk about the abuse they were experiencing in that workplace. And it was like, empathetic, because I know, but I'm out. Kind of like, I'm out. So I'm sorry, you need to leave too. Like, that's where it really began. Like, there's not much else there for us, but the fact that you still continue to experience this abuse that I have escaped. So yeah, it can look like that as well.
I don't have a COVID-19 example, but a nigga's been through some traumatic shit in life. Yes. And I remember starting a new relationship with someone and feeling that high of NRE and comparing it to an existing relationship with someone else and actually like using that in the NRE kind of way where it's like, I, but you got this, but you don't got this. And one of the, but you don't got this was like shared traumatic experiences and being able to like go into that dark place that exists within myself with that person who also had that dark place. Mm-hmm. And then realizing that outside of things like that, after the NRE was over, that we actually really didn't have that much in common at all.
There ain't nothing else there.
Yeah. I mean, there was, but it was like we were not compatible as people. Mm-hmm. Like, we had things in common, but we were not compatible as people.
I had a similar situation in terms of friendship. And it's something that I still harp on now, even though it happened in middle school. I had a friend.
I just didn't expect you to go back that far.
Like, I know.
Not that far.
I know,
I was like
but
four
it's
or five
like
years ago. Like, no, when I was 12.
No, middle school. Because
it was an important time.
Like, formative.
It was this time where, like, I was constantly being, like, bullied and constantly being, like, ridiculed for being fat. And there was one other fat person in the class. And we became friends because we were both being bullied for the same thing. And, like, I would send her songs that were, like, because I had a long emo phase. I don't think it's ever ended. But, like, all, like, songs, like, rock songs where it's, like, we're the ones who get stepped on in society. Like, just straight up, like, always doing that. And I know that that was, like, the one, she was the one person that I could talk to about this, you know? But then when middle school ended, she was, like, I don't want to be friends with you anymore because all you do is talk about being fat. And I was like, you're right. And then, like, it was a lot. But it's true. It was like that. It was like my thing where I needed this. I needed this person. And I was essentially not using them because I liked them as an individual. But this was the one person that, like, anytime I was feeling insecure or anytime I felt like I was dropping it on them. And for them, they were like, they realized, like, outside of this shared, like, bullying and feeling sad, there was not really anything that we had in common. Mm. So I was like, I totally understand why they were just like, I don't want to be friends with you anymore. But that was the only time in my life that anybody had outright said that. So
yeah,
I'm
never
still holding on to that.
I'm mad hurt hearing you hear that.
Yo, like, I was so hurt. And, like, that's why I said, I know it's middle school, but it's still, no, I'm fucking 27. I'm like, oh my God. Because it was just, this is also the same person that I came out to, and they were just like, nah, you're not. You're just trying to copy me. And I was like, all right.
Okay,
bro,
honestly, this person
like,
kind of sucks,
see,
bro.
You
like,
see the balance?
You're kind of
like, okay. And I was like, what? And yeah, I ran into them. I saw them at a queer party, and I was like, in my head, I was like, I'm here too. But I didn't say anything. But yes, it was that. But I understand, like, how it can work in friendships too, where it's just like you're so excited about having this shared, whether it be trauma, but also just like these shared interests, and it like propels forward. But it could be one thing that you're so fixated on that it doesn't really have a lasting effect in terms of like values and common other commonalities. Mm-hmm. So I definitely have been there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very us against the world kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, I think that was a really in-depth discussion of NRE. I appreciated it. Anybody have any other thoughts? Thank you for doing that, Rodeca.
Thank you, Rodeca. That was amazing.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Rodeca and her deep dives lately.
Thank you. I guess, like, the closing thing was, like, a part of the reason why this came up and, like, just an update on my life. Like, I am making some big, well, cool, you're going to find out, but I'm moving in with this person. I'm moving in with
Nika.
So, like, yeah, it's... Whoa. But I'm moving in.
Wait, hold on. How long has it been?
It'll be a year next month.
See, and I had a feeling. I was like, I still ain't met this nigga.
Yeah.
And in my mind, it's been like 3 months, but Corona has.
And that's exactly what happened.
Corona really made
eyes.
Like 7 months, 2 weeks.
Feel like 2 weeks.
Exactly. Yeah. 2 weeks.
But also 3 years at the same
exactly.
time.
Exactly. And for me, well, we started like the fading into from NRE to ORE. Started a little like 2 or 3 months ago, but at the same time it's still new, so it was it's a very frightening prospect because this is what I want to do, but at the same time it's like, am I doing some crazy shit? Am I jumping off, you know, this cliff and not really looking back? But also having had this experience in my past relationships. And honestly, the fading of NRE into ORE is what made me look into polyamory in the first place, because I thought, well, am I ever going to be, and this is not why poly should always start, but for me, why it made me think about it, other than like it being in my life, was like, why is it that whenever it gets quote unquote like normal or like not, why am I always looking for something else? But I realized that that's not really polyamory, even though I am polyamorous. It's more like me realizing that I need to start doing that work for myself. And it's not always going to be the relationship constantly creating this energy and this like excitement in life. That's stuff that I have to find out on my own, like through hobbies and like just building shit, you know? Mm-hmm. But I would focus so much on my relationship because that was the high that I was getting, because it was this validation. But also, I don't want to repeat the same mistakes in this new situation where it's just like, okay, things are normal. There's work being put into it. That's fine. And realizing that that's fine. So that's really what stemmed it, because it didn't feel fine. It felt like I said before, like it was a failure. So knowing that it is normal is like, it's good. And the fun part is the ORE, because that's when you find your friend. And that's when all my relationships now, these long relationships, are the best relationships, because it's been a while. These people know me. I'm no longer like sitting here going, I'm so scared. Are they going to like these things about me? I'm being myself. And there's something so powerful with being with people that you've known for a long time, and you're being yourself, and they're still like fucking with you. I take that over like the new shit where you don't even really know if you're being yourself any day. Like, it's just great to be yourself with people that you've known for a long time. And it's still this ORE. That's why we don't call it old. It's ongoing, man. It's work,
but also
we're doing it, and it's a good time.
The old part is like, kind of by not saying old, you're kind of like signifying that old is a bad thing.
That's
the old
true.
Is like,
you know,
a good thing, bro. If I'm 90 and I'm old, I'm like, yo, I'm out here, son. And I've been out here
you're
for mad
right.
long, bro. Like, longevity is like cool.
That's important. And it's something that I didn't think about until you just said it. And fuck that. I need to take away the fucking negative connotation of being old. That shit is lit. Because I want to be old.
IPhone.
I want to. Yeah, exactly. That's true. Like, you're good.
It's like an aged wine, as opposed to.
Yeah, it gets better with time. That's good. Yes, there you go.
Yeah.
So yeah, old relationship energy is better. And I'm down for it.
All of that sounded so lovely, Rodeca. Aww. And it just made me think that I've never experienced ORE.
Oh, cool. You have in your friendships. I love you.
You
I've known you since
friendships.
I was like five. Well, not five.
There you go.
A long time ago.
I've known you a bit too long.
Ouchies.
It's been
but
too
yes,
long.
Okay. But yeah, in my friendships, yeah.
Yeah. Good work. Well, if you guys at home are like in NRE, moving to ORE, never experienced either RE. I was trying to do a rap thing, but I couldn't. But email us, ihatepodcast@gmail.com. We want to hear about all of your experiences. I'm particularly interested in, because me and Rodeca were talking about this earlier, and I was like, is this worth exploring? And Rodeca was like, nah! And then afterwards, she was like, oh yeah, maybe.
Yes.
I am curious. So I just typed in NRE and infidelity, because I was trying to rhyme once again. No, I was just curious about it. And I discovered that there's a whole subreddit for adultery, which was just like, wait, what? But I guess there's subreddits for anything, and niggas have
there
all
is.
Kinds of interest. And they had all of these different like abbreviations and stuff like that. Like, they would call the person that they're cheating with their affair partner, AP for short. And NRE was something that they discussed a lot. And then I saw another article that was like, kind of counselor or a couples therapist or whatever, coaching couples through opening up. And NRE came up there because they'd been experiencing NRE with people outside of their, I guess, primary relationship. So I'm just curious about the experiences of people who start to begin to experience NRE when they're not in a polyamorous relationship. Because there's so much... There's actually so much overlap, even though people who are poly look at monogamous people like vanilla, and people who are monogamous look at polyamorous people like, I could never do that. Meanwhile, they're fucking cheating on their wives at that very moment that they're saying that. but there's a lot of overlap in regards to, because we're all people, right? Like, regards to how we develop new attractions to people, whether it be platonic or romantic, how we communicate with people, where we find ourselves when we're experiencing these feelings and what kinds of behaviors like come out of that. Like, there's a parallel between someone in a poly relationship experiencing NRE who starts to falter when it comes to their previous partner or their long-term partner, yep, to someone in a long-term monogamous relationship who starts to pull back in their monogamous relationship and stop being communicative because they're like falling in love, yeah, with their coworker or something like that. Like, those are not, mm-hmm, really opposite, yep, sides of a coin. It's like one line.
It's literally one. And wait, yes, are they opposite sides of the same coin?
I don't know what that phrase means, so.
Okay.
Yes, it I means would say they the are thing. Opposite sides, all right, of the same coin.
Well, fuck it. I don't like that phrase.
You had it right the first time. I don't time. Like that That's phrase. All I'm saying.
But yeah, so okay. Experiences, all that jazz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All jazz. All right, we're gonna move on to our last topic of the day. The segment is called Fuck You. It is where we read your listener letters. If you would like to ask us for some advice, share your hotels, rant against the white cishet patriarchy, you can send your thoughts to ihupodcast@gmail.com. Please include your pronouns. Also, because we are in the future, you can leave us a voicemail. We'll play it and respond to it on the show. You can drop us a line at 404-491-9158. Both of those, the email and the phone number, will be in the description of this episode. And our letter today is titled, Where's the Ass in 2020? It's from Mella Ho. Gotta love that too. And Mella Ho's pronouns are she and her. Mella Ho writes, Hi loves. I'd like to be called Mella Ho. I'm trying my bestest to be a positive, fun ho, but these dudes from the 30 to 60 age range got too much bullshit. And first, we need to unpack that. That's a big ass age range.
That's a huge
range. That is 3 decades in that age range.
Are you telling me that it's consistently just like too much bullshit?
That, and as Mella someone Ho who's approaching 30, no, you just took away so much hope for the next,
it's gone,
32
for me,
years of my life.
But the thing is, if I unpack it, because these niggas in the 20s ain't got it for me. So like,
you might as well extend it.
I gotta find me a 70-year-old. Like, I just gotta
maybe
jump
it's kind of lit at 70 though. You know,
maybe
is it after retirement? Like, is it 75 the wave? What's happening?
Okay. I need so answers. If it's after retirement, then we can kind of play there and get a younger retiree. Who might be, yes, more in tune with like your physical activities and stuff like if it's the retirement thing as opposed to the age thing, then we can maybe we can make this work. but yeah, according to Mella Ho, these dudes from 30 to 60 got too much bullshit. I forgot which episode it was. You and Rob read my letter about being 52 and not having friends who were sex positive. Rob suggested that I find a sex positive group, and I did that. From following King Noir and his wife, Jet Setting Jasmine, I found a kink group that allows you to explore all things BDSM, and they also set up retreats, but due to COVID, no retreats this year. But it's still cool to get to know like-minded people. We share pics, stories, and dating movies, etc. So thanks to Rob for that suggestion. Now moving on to the dilemma. I had also spoke on one of the IHU Zoom meetups about how dudes talk a good game about chilling and having positive sex vibes with no strings, but then turns out they are not single or poly. Yep.
Man.
Just this weekend, I got nearly ghosted by a guy who'd been after the booty for over a year. Now when I finally say, let's do this, because I'm horny as hell, he's all for it. He says he's bringing champagne and then texting and calling go blank the day of. This is a text that I got from him after I texted him that it's okay if he changed his mind and to have a nice day. So his text says, hey, sorry, I went to bed early.
Oh, yeah. Oh, child.
Anybody who's ever said that is lying. And this is from someone who has said that. Sorry.
And that's exactly what I'm about to say. I'm seeing it and making the reaction because I've been there. I've been that
on
person.
Both sides. On both sides.
On both sides.
On both signs.
Hey, sorry, I went to bed early. I'm working. Sorry, didn't text you. I'm sorry, but yes, I did change my mind. I'm seeing someone, and it wouldn't be right if I did that to her. My apologies. Have a great day.
Nigga, what?
The four I'm sorry's were just like, ah, man, it negated itself each time. Is, it was like, maybe the third one he's sorry, but the fourth one absolutely.
How about
not.
Normalizing? Let me get in my Twitter bag. Normalize this. But normalize stopping saying sorry when your actions show that you're not fucking sorry. Because you wouldn't have fucking done that.
Saying I'm sorry is not a turn of phrase. It's like, it's supposed to be intentional. Like, you're supposed to actually be sorry. It's not something you pepper in a sentence because it sounds nice.
It's fucking paprika. It does nothing, bro.
It's not parsley.
I need some garlic powder. I need a garlic powder. Sorry.
That's it.
I know fucking paprika. Sorry in this bitch, man. You're the fucking, the lettuce on the side of the plate that nobody eats. That's what
it's the parsley you sprinkle on the top of the dish that adds
it,
nothing.
It adds nothing but garnish.
Nothing
it's garnish.
But garnish and color.
Yeah. And Melaho sees right through it, as do we, you motherfucker. I was like, I'm not surprised you're booed up and lose my number. Sheesh. I live in the tri-state area. Where are the people who want to have a sexual good time and aren't shady as fuck? I hope you are all having a great summer. Just needed to vent. Thanks, Melaho can't be a hoe. I feel
you know
so
what?
Bad for Melaho.
I've noticed that, and this resonated with me because I definitely revamped my whole phase. Definitely after I broke up with that other person before.
Ooh.
But it was just like me really, yeah, we don't talk about that person. But I went out with this intention of just like, this should be easy. I'm saying I don't want a relationship. I just want some ass and somebody to chill with. I said it in my dating profiles. I said it. I was like, look, everybody wants to avoid the commitment thing, right? That's the perception. It is so much harder in a lot of ways to just do that because one, people are still lying, even though you're like, look, I don't want anything with you. I'm just trying to have fun. Or like people are asking you why and you're just kind of like, I can explain why, but don't ask me again. Like, but I'm not getting it. You should be in a relationship. Nah, man. Like, I don't want one. But it's just like this weird thing. Like people, if you're giving it to them, whatever way you want it, they will find a way to make it into a shady, I don't really want to tell the truth type of thing. Mm-hmm. Even when you're laying it all on the line. And I don't know. Where's the consensual, normal ass? I don't know. It's just...
I'm not too certain. But I think that the shadiness lies, and this is just me positing, in the fact that there's just a severe inability for people to communicate. Like, people feel mad fucking uncomfortable communicating, which is fair because communicating is uncomfortable. But, like, grow up. Just grow up. I don't have any other advice other than that because I communicate a lot of fucking things that make me feel uncomfortable all the fucking time. And it always makes me feel super nervous and my heart flutters a little bit and I'm like, oh, God, what's going to happen after this? But I just do it. Just fucking do it. I don't have anything else for you.
That- There's a misconception that it's easy for some people.
No,
like, yeah, we talk about communication on this show all the time, but I literally went to school for communications. I will tell you that every single time I'm getting up to say something about how I feel, it makes me incredibly uncomfortable. But you do the work. You just got to. And if you you're trash. Go ahead. Sorry. Cool.
I literally sit and teach people communication skills as part of my job. And guess who still struggles with discomfort in communication?
Yeah.
Me, the trained professional. Yeah. And shit is uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But it needs to be done.
Exactly.
And it is possible.
And it's yes, it's not impossible. It can be done.
I think it's like that. And then also... maybe it's like the individualism of our society, which I think is a fucking completely real thing, especially in America, but that it's okay or right or easy to discard people. And by not properly communicating in any kind of relationship that you have, whether it's a booty call or your fucking coworker or your partner or whatever, by not fostering that, you are discarding this person in some sort of way and saying that they are not worthy of adequate communication. And sure, you know, maybe you're a fucking dick. Maybe you're fine with discarding whoever the fuck. But that that behavior is going to carry into other things that you do in your life. And you're going to fucking unintentionally discard someone who you actually wanted to stay there. So it at least be good practice.
Sorry, Melaho, we don't know what we don't know where the people at.
That's really what it is.
I'm asking that question.
I'm not sure. I'm sure they exist, but I'm not sure.
Somewhere.
Yeah. Anyway, if this episode made you laugh, helped you learn something, made you feel good, made you question yourself in a good way, or positively moved you in any sense, please leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher and let everyone you know that you love the hoes. We appreciate all of you.
And if you would like to follow us on social media, you can do so at Inaho Uprising without the G on Twitter, Inaho Uprising on Instagram and Facebook. You can join our Facebook group by searching Inaho Uprising, CUMMUNITY. Head to InahoUprising.com to sign up for weekly goodies via our newsletter, Pay a Ho, or check out our merch. And if you would like to follow me, Rodeca, personally, you can on Instagram at The Darkest Timeline and on Twitter at Exist in Crisis.
You guys can follow me, Akua, at Hey, Akua Girl on Instagram.
You can follow me at SlamRid on Instagram and Twitter. If you follow me on Instagram, you're always going to see me posting really, really weird pictures of food. That I can guarantee. There's other kinds of things going on. They're all fun things, but it's always really, really weird pictures of food. So if you're into that kind of shit, follow me on Instagram. You can also follow my travel page at Carmen San Diego. And you can also have a lovely motherfucking week, you beautiful individual.
That's a fucking
please.
You do it.
Period.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Bye.